Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. Our sponsor this hour is Team Power. I'm sorry, not Team Power. This is what happens when you get in a hurry.
That's what happens when I don't. I still answer the phone, George's equipment sometimes at work.
Yeah, that doesn't
work. What was that, 10 years ago?
Team Power didn't pay their bill. Now we have Pape Machinery. They're our local
John Deere. Yeah, we don't love Team Power anymore. They're dead to us.
Yeah, they're dead to us. Pape Machinery is our local John Deere dealer, and they handle everything ag, turf. They're also a Honda generator dealer, and generators are going to be a hot item here in another couple of months. If you live in California in the summertime, they're going to shut your power off.
As soon as it becomes hot, you're the item.
That's right. So go by and see the folks there at Pape Machinery. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or go online at papemachinery.com. There you go.
Ta-da.
Who are we talking to today?
Look at that. You did that in like 1 minute.
Oh, yeah.
Or 1 minute in. We haven't even goofed off.
Yeah, don't try that at home.
Okay, no goofing off because we got a lot to do. We're talking about the coronavirus today. We're going to get some information that apparently has not been released to date. And it won't be coming from Bill and I, so you can rest easy. We did not become microbiologists over the weekend.
I tried.
Was that when you were watching Ancient Aliens this morning?
Yeah. I think they were giving me some bad information.
The guy who watches Ancient Aliens and Dirty Jobs.
Hey, I bet I know more about the Anunnaki than you do.
He does know how to separate wool, though. We learned that this morning.
That's right.
Oh, man. Okay, that's the end of the fun right there. We've hit the end of the road. So you can find the program online, which is a really easy way for you to share that with people. So it's We the People Radio. .us, and all of the archives are free for you to listen to, free for you to send. They are MP3 files, so you can download them. I don't care if you put them on flash drives and sell them at a fundraiser. I mean, you can do whatever you want with it. We do this show for the benefit of the public, so you just get the information out. That's your job. We'll keep finding great people to come and tell you stuff. So I do have a lady, just by way of a future announcement. I do have a guy. I met a guy at a meeting about a fire up in Siskiyou County, and he lives part-time in Costa Rica. And I said, hey, well, while you're there, why don't you find me somebody to talk about how great it is to live in Venezuela or Nicaragua or one of those countries? We found somebody. So we're working to set that up.
Yeah.
So we can stop hearing from Bernie and the gang about how great socialism is going to be.
It's not going to be great.
Yeah, mostly no. And we're not going to have to wait long for the spoiler alert on that one, because today's show will illustrate that, I think, in living color, just in case we needed a more poignant example. So our guests today have been on the program before, and I would encourage you to go to the tab on the website, Mark China. It's pretty easy. It's right along the top. And the China tab has all the different shows we have done about the forced organ harvesting, all the things that really the media doesn't talk about. And if they do, they talk about it for 30 seconds or less. So we just drone on. We find these bad topics, and we just go on and on and on and do multiple shows.
So we must be doing something right, because all our topics end up being on mainstream media within a few days.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. The last show we did on China, we watched Tucker Carlson on Monday night, and like half his show was about the same thing we discussed on Sunday. So it's good to have a Sunday show. You can beat all the other guys to the punch. But we have Dr. Shizong Chen and Eureka Young with us. We've had both of them on before. We've had them on together. We've had them on separately and learned all sorts of fun things from them. Dr. Chen has been active in projects concerning China for over 30 years. He's founded, co-founded, or been a spokesperson for a number of organizations concerning China and has spoken extensively on issues related to China. He began his activism in 1989 when he helped organize the supporting activities during the 1989 Beijing student movement. Outraged by the June 4th massacre, Dr. Chen founded the Tiananmen Square Foundation and has served on the board of the Press Freedom Guardian. He was elected as the vice president of the Independent Federation of Chinese Students and Scholars in the U.S. And I'm going to skip to the bottom, because that's the part. Here we go. He was born in China in 1962, just to give you some frame of reference. At 15, he entered the gifted program at China University of Science and Technology, came to the U.S. in 1982 to study, and received his Ph.D. in molecular biology at the University of California, San Diego. Currently owns and runs a molecular biology startup in San Diego. So he's a scientist, needless to say.
I think that's where I met him.
Is it science camp?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was highly likely. We'll count on you for all the probing questions. How's that?
Oh, just verification.
Okay.
That's all.
And our other guest, Mr. Eureka Young, came to the U.S. from China as a college student in 1988. He attended Eastern Michigan University in a small town 10 miles east of Ann Arbor. After graduate school, he worked at a spinoff, Booz Allen Hamilton, whose search engine was deployed among leading enterprises and government agencies. First as a kernel engineer, like kernel with a K. Now we're moving on to computers. We've gone from science to computers. All the non-tech people just passed out. Just
hang with us here a minute.
I can hear my mom. She's like, what are they saying? And later as an independent consultant, Mr. Young handled a high availability and high throughput of information needs with clients worldwide. Since 2012, Mr. Young's provided research, analysis, and other services to private investors and not-for-profit organizations covering macroeconomics and geopolitical topics in U.S.-China relations. So both these guys come from China. They know how they operate there. I do believe we'll talk a lot about the CCP. So when you hear that, it's the Chinese Communist Party. We don't hear that enough in our news. They talk a lot about all sorts of things, but they don't specifically talk about the CCP. I noticed that is specifically missing in our U.S. discussions of China. It should be right at the front of the line. So, fellas, we've got a couple of minutes before our first break. Who wants to kick off this weighty topic on the coronavirus?
Hi. Can you hear me?
We can. Now, who are we talking to?
Oh, this is Shi Zhong.
Oh, hello.
How are you?
We'll have to put names with the voices until we get that all squared away.
Let me answer my voice. And this is Eureka Young. Hi, Aaron and Bill. Nice to be here again.
Hi.
Coming in loud and clear. It's good to hear from you.
Can you guys hear each other, actually, before we
yeah,
go
yeah.
to? Oh, that's,
oh
a,
good.
That's a whole new idea. Good job, Ashley. She's killing it in there. All right, so we've got two shows with you, so we don't have to be in such a... We don't have to be in an absolute panic to cram it all in here in one thing, but where would you like to begin today?
Well, since we're talking about coronavirus, I'll start with that. And in just a matter of a few months, this coronavirus has exploded. Just 2 weeks ago, there were less than 10 countries that found his coronavirus cases. And now we have about 40% of the world's country, discovering these cases. So the damage is we're far from knowing the its potential damage, but this. One conclusion is for sure, that this pandemic forever ended the CCP's threat of world expansion and aggression, and its threat of lies. But it begins an even more terrifying period, I'm afraid, when the CCP will drag the whole world down to sink with it. So it's death and decay. And this is what I want to start with. I want to let the people think about this because, lately, particularly with President Trump's, standing up to the CCP, the world, face the CCP threat with more resistance. But to face, to realize the CCP is not just a threat when it grows and expands, but actually worse when it dies and decays. This is new. This is something that the world's people have not come to realize that, and this is what I want to spend some time on to discuss. I understand that we have a break coming up soon, so I will stop here for now to give Yurika a few words in.
Yeah, well, I think this is a great place to take our first break.
It would be if I was totally ready to do it.
Yeah. Well, here we are. So, yeah, we'll take a break, and then when we come back, we'll pick it up. And I'm curious to hear about how the CCP actually, if they actually realize that this is a threat to them, and if they realize that this could be their undoing by the way they've handled this whole corona thing. So, with that, are we ready for a break?
I don't know. Yeah, we are.
You want me to start juggling, or maybe...
Okay, I'm trying to run the music from in here, and we've got Skype going in the other room. Okay, got it on. I've got it plugged in, but no sound is coming out. Well, let's see. Pretend you can hear Carly Simon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just like Carly Simon, only different. Oh, Ashley pulled another one out of the fire. I don't know why it's not playing in here.
Okay, well, we'll be back.
We'll be busy working on our electronics. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right if we didn't play Carly Simon's Them. So I didn't become a microbiologist during the break, but I did figure out how to work the sound on my computer.
Hmm. Yeah. You could be one of
them. And I have slept at a Holiday Inn Express. So.
Yeah, there you go. Played one on TV. So we were talking about the CCP and a possible downfall, the whole communist system over there. Where would you like to pick that up?
Yeah, this is Eureka. I've been listening to your program and later, and I picked up quite a few terms from Dr. Chan, and the topic that he has brought up today, it gives the tension of in his, not just his terms, his language, but also in the conceptual framework. People are used to be afraid of like CCP's expansion. Like it's dominating in Asia and quite a few international organizations, WHO in particular, World Health Organization. And another term, like earlier than this, I believe Dr. Chen talked about that in the past, was generous barbarism. So it is, there's this conflict, there's this tension, like it is being generous, yet like it is in nature, it is barbaric. And your last program, a part of your last program was about censorship. That is exactly what's happening under the communist rule in today's China, where facts, information, and especially facts, are blocked. That's when and the virus runs rampant. So there's this kind of a conceptual framework that really helps me to see like even deeper, although I've been an observer about China affairs, about current affairs in China for a long time, and I appreciate, I'm glad to be here, and I'll pitch in, and Dr. Chen, I believe, has more than he would like to cover. He is an expert in biology, right? So I'm all my ears.
Yeah, where do we, what we're hearing on the corona out of China, how much are they not telling us? With your resources, have you heard anything?
They have practically told us nothing. Well, Yurika, you go ahead.
Oh, okay. currently, they have there are two phases of blocking an information censorship to block facts from getting out. And March the 1st was the first day of a new regulation that takes effect, that is their time today. And anyone who, it was long coming, and the regulation was published, I believe, toward the end of last year, although it probably wasn't planned in, like, planned with this foresight of a coronavirus outbreak, but it was coming anyways. It's congruent with the way that the CCP will be in charge of everything, not only about companies, about what people say. It is trying even to influence how people think, and it will block significant information flow both into China and out of China, and not only just what people can see over the internet, but also what they are not even allowed to. There are even topics that would be banned, not just information or discussion about certain topics. And prior to March the 1st, prior to today, that was around 2 weeks or so ago. Two or three weeks ago, they started preventing any negative information to flow out from the epicenter of the outbreak, which is Wuhan, and Wuhan, which is the capital of Hubei province. And there, I believe, there from video and footages that people smuggled out. Now that some of those in China, they have Twitter accounts. So I've been following a growing number of Twitter account holders. Some are in China. Some have close relationship with people in there, and the words from them are quite bad. And I believe you covered in your last week's program. You covered the death toll and the potential number of patients. I do not have authoritative number on that, but basically, there are overseas, and there are also scholars in Taiwan who are estimating the numbers will be tenfold what the government has released in Wuhan and its neighborhood within Hubei province.
And that's what Dr. Wen Chen said. She said basically take whatever number that they give you and multiply it by 10, and that's a pretty safe bet.
Right. With those numbers, it's not hard to see how they are going to be unable to contain this, and obviously they're not. I mean, they have new cases in our country. I guess they have their first new case in the Dominican Republic now. So it is spreading. And then I also heard, too, that they have the first case of somebody who's been reinfected. So it's not like if you have it and get over it, you're okay. It looks like you can get it again. Have you heard anything about that?
Yes, these cases are reported not only in southeast China province of Guangdong. There are cases also in Canada. People tested positive after being released from hospital for treatment, for cure. And scientists are not yet sure whether that will be any contagion of a recurring patient will be as bad, or it will be less severe than when he first contracted with the disease. So I'm not I'll probably defer to Dr. Chen, see what he has to say about it.
So while we're on this topic about the information, and the information come out from China there's the information, but you don't know which one information is true, which right. one is not true. So it's worse a lot of times. And so this is, I call the CCP's fatal deception. And this is no one does deception better than the CCP. Not even the Nazi, not even the Goebbels can outdo the CCP. And this cannot be better demonstrated than in this coronavirus crisis. If you remember, at the beginning, of this outbreak, even in the most scathing articles criticizing the CCP's handling of this crisis, it, you know, has to put something about, you know, its vast improvement, the CCP's vast improvement compared to its handling of the 2003 SARS crisis. And in reality, this vast improvement is nothing more than a trap of partial truths is more believable than a total lie. And that's why I say, you know, the information come out there is, it's useless, right?
Right.
Because it's really a partial truth is more believable than total lie kind of trap. And it, this trap is a variation of the proverbial, boiling frog trap, right? I mean, the partial truth is tap hot water instead of hot water, you know? And so the CCP learned the hard lesson of international discontent, you know, over its total cover-up from the 2003 SARS crisis. So it disclosed some manageable cases of infection ahead of the inevitable revelation to the public. And the world says, okay, there's a vast improvement. Well, now we see this vast improvement is nothing more than a skillful, it's really a vast improvement in terms of how to manage lies. And now China claims that its case is decreasing. Now, the cases are increasing over the world. How can it be decreasing? And so I remember we talked about the controlled massacre in Hong Kong a few months ago when the Hong Kong protest is at its height, right? That's a similar case of managing partial truth as a better lie, right? So the CCP learned a hard lesson of international outrage over its 1989 June 4th massacre. So it metered out a rate-controlled killing of Hong Kong protesters. Right. So this is what we're dealing with. This is what we're seeing now in coronavirus. And this is also, this lie is also amplified by the WHCO's campaign into China's manipulation or oppression.
World Health Organization was complicit, I think, in SARS. I believe we learned last week. Let's take a quick break and we'll come right back with our guests. I forgot to mention, just in case we replay this, we won't be replaying it in far into the future, hopefully, but it's March 1st, 2020 today. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We've got everybody just, you know, I won't play something so relaxing next time. It's making everybody drift off. Sorry. My bad. Okay, so, never mind, just carry on.
Yeah. So the CCP is a master at deception. And they seem
pretty bad when somebody says they're better than the Nazis, because they were pretty good.
Oh yeah, and they learn from their mistakes, and they seem to be getting better and better at it. And with this corona deal, you're right. Obviously, how can their cases be going down and everywhere else in the world they're going up?
But I think it was Dr. Chen last week who had said that during SARS, the World Health Organization kind of played along with them. They sort of swept them under their little wing.
Yeah, it was about it was so many years ago. Some of the details I couldn't recall, but I do remember, and that was before 2005. The public health emergency, like across country boundaries, before WHO has this regulation, emergency response mechanism set up in 2005. So that took place even prior to that, and Beijing worked pretty hard to get whatever designation about like this. Like disease area designation lifted, like in as few, as short a period as it was possible. And even with whatever manipulation it was able to accomplish by 2003, I don't think Beijing thought it was enough. So by 2006, they sent in a lady named Margaret Chan. She was from Hong Kong. She became Director General of WHO, and she served a long term spanning over a decade. I think she stepped off around 2017, and by the time she stepped off, Beijing made sure that her successor, Tedros, today, was handpicked, I believe, by her and by her.
Yeah, so that should make us feel safe, knowing that they have their own person right there in the WHO.
Well, people look at that and they think that's all, that's like some sort of a firewall, I guess, you know, so they're, of course, disseminating nothing but truth.
Right, and they, in this way, several representatives from WHO who went to China, they did not went to visit the doctors, they got no information, the WHO experts acknowledged, they have gathered no information about physicians who got ill, got contracted with the disease. So they had gathered no information. They went there, but somehow they came up with the conclusion that if we experts in WHO, we got sick, we got this virus, we need go to Beijing to seek treatment. That's what their conclusion. So now you see how much more influential Beijing has become in this World Health Organization today.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's frightening.
I don't want to get off topic, but question comes to mind. If let's say you're traveling and they suspect that you may be infected, how long is that testing period? If I go through an airport and I've got a fever, do they like stick a needle in you and test you right on the spot, or does that testing process take a few days to really get the results?
Well, there's
no,
several
the
different
airport,
kinds of
yeah,
tests.
Screening. Yeah, go ahead, Dr. Chen.
Okay. Well, there's several different levels of test. You know, originally in the airport, it's just, you know, they have the handheld thermometer,
yeah.
Infrared thermometer. But then later, they find that the doctors find that there's a certain percentage of the patients are symptomless. So they
right.
carry the virus, they're contagious, yet they don't show any symptoms. So that obviously is not a very reliable test. The more reliable test is, you know, the PCR screening. And again, that later doctor find that there are many people who were tested negative, meaning they found no virus in them. And then after a few tests, they found, oops, this person has, you know, virus. So in a way, this virus is a perfect virus. And we can talk about that later. This is the most dangerous virus against, you know, human. Now, your question is probably also related to the what we call the incubation period. I mean, not only how long it takes to test you, but how long would it take for the symptom to show up for mm-hmm. For people to know, for the doctor to know that there's a visible symptom, right? And this again is also very puzzling. That is, usually the incubation is characteristic and consistent with the same disease. I mean, it's either, you know, a week plus a minus a day or 14 days. But this virus, up to now, the doctors do not have a conclusion, a consistent conclusion. Some people have incubation up to 50 days. And some people, some people have symptoms in the afternoon, infect in the morning, and they have infection in the afternoon. So that's another.
So there's no real positive way to test at this point. I mean, if a person doesn't have any symptoms, they wouldn't probably even be tested.
Right.
And a person could have the virus, and it wouldn't show up in our current testing methods.
Around giving it to everybody.
Yeah, you could have somebody going through an airport with the common cold, and oh my gosh, he's got the corona. You know, they pull him aside and quarantine him for
me with asthma, coughing in church, and everybody's like, shake her hand.
That you're right. That's the perfect virus because you can't identify it. And you say?
Great, Bill. You ruined the show.
Sorry. So getting back to the WHO, where do we go from here?
So do we just not listen to those guys? I mean, do they have any validity at all at this point?
At this point, in fact, I hope the world knows that they have no credibility. And that's what I hope. Right? And I hope at this point, there should be enough country to be concerned about it and demand a independent international investigation. And of course, that has to have the force the Chinese government to, or the CCP to accept it. But really, to get to the bottom of this, it takes a independent international investigation, and keep the world. Keep the WHO and even the United Nations out of this. That's the only way we can get to the bottom of this.
So do you think that other countries aren't up to speed on the long arm of the CCP and their impact and effect on these different organizations? Do they not know that they've been infiltrated and aren't reliable?
Well, this is what I was going to bring up, and it was at the beginning I was saying that, the CCP is a major threat against the world during its expansion and aggression, right? That's how they gain, its influence, its infiltration in the United Nations, in other world organizations, right? Now we are entering into another period when CCP is going to lose those influence, but still, it will continue to drag the world down. But I assume there are a lot of audience who wasn't familiar, who are not familiar with what we have talked about, but how the CCP quickly expanded its power in the the past quarter century.
Right.
And what I have discussed before in this program is called CCP's generous barbarism. Basically, the CCP differ from the Hitler or Nazi or the Soviet Union. It claims to the world, no, we will not threaten you. In fact, we'll be generous to you. We will share our economic benefit with you. The only condition is you look away from what we do inside China. And so With this, for a quarter of a century, it caused a feeding frenzy on China's perceived massive market. The fear of falling out of the CCP's economic favor. And this fostered a quid pro quo understanding between the free world governments and the wealthy establishment, wealthy establishments with the CCP. That is, you know, you make your money, and we will share. The CCP will give, you know, a lot of economic favor to you, and then you just look away from what we do, the things we do.
Sure, we'll give you cheap goods, and you ignore the fact that we're making people work for nothing.
Yeah, right. we're all basically complicit in that.
Yeah, and we're just not going to talk about that. Hold on for 2 seconds. Take a really quick break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Favorite part, but we'll come back anyway. You can play that song when we get home.
Okay. All right.
Oh man. Okay. So continue on with the master plan of the CCP, and it truly, I mean, I shouldn't say it in a joking way. I mean, it is a master plan, and it's held. I don't even think we could quantify how many people are being forced to create goods and services that the CCP is then making available to businesses from around the world at cheap rates, as long as nobody looks at the humanitarian side of it. Is that kind of the arrangement, I guess, that's made?
Hello? Uh-oh.
Yeah, Eureka is still here.
Yeah. Okay, sorry.
I have to play different songs. It's putting everybody. It's knocking everybody out.
Yeah, for the past like 2.5 decades, Beijing was at first it started off by luring. It was just after the Tiananmen era, and it was facing sanctions from the United States and a lot of European countries. So it was anxious to get foreigners to start invest. So it made some concessions, freed a few dissidents, let them like leave the country, and also gave favorable terms to foreign companies like Motorola was one of the earliest ones, and AT&T, and I believe quite a few other leading companies to go into China. But after they carried out quite a few tricks. They would probably try to entice these executives from the leading companies somehow get into not so decent deals, like either monetary or transactions like in sex and in exchange for favor and all that. So when these people are under the got their dirty laundry or got a dossier built up in Beijing, then they would be forced to comply. And this happened to diplomats from South Korea, and also happened to business people in Western countries. And after years and years of this practice, and also after like nowadays, like we are now after intellectual property status and all that, Western companies started losing an edge. So that is why on January 15th, during that ceremony celebrating Phase 1 deal, the signing of the Phase 1 deal, mm-hmm. President Trump told Boeing that you don't want to be weak. You need to be strong when you go back to talk to Chinese, to people in Beijing. Now that we have this deal, that we are backing you up. And that it took a long time for a U.S. administration. It's not until this administration that finally a U.S. company started getting some help.
Interesting. So in the past, do you think U.S. companies were kind of on their own to negotiate and the administration stayed out of it? Or they said, hey, don't make waves. We want to be palsy-walsy with them. Because we have this bad habit of going in and we think that if we're nice to them and they like us and we're all going to be friends, then they're going to magically stop, you know, enslaving their people or killing them or doing whatever they're doing, and they're going to want to be just like us, which obviously doesn't work.
The previous administration did try to do something. I think as early as Bush, George W. Bush, and during his administration, also during Obama administration, there were these tracks of negotiation. They call it, first they called it economic dialogue. Then they added security track onto it. But Beijing was so good at procrastination, and it was so good at misleading and giving empty promises. That's why in this phase one deal, there is this punishment clause built into it, right? So if Beijing does not meet what it has promised, then certain causes would kick in, right? Then, so that was how things were going for almost two decades, and finally, the administration realized, we need to deal with Huawei, and we need to deal with companies not given Chinese market, like U.S. banks. They are not allowed to retail business with Chinese depositors, and I believe in this recent German in this Germany Forum of Security of European Security, a Chinese diplomat challenged U.S. I believe House of Speaker of House Ms. Pelosi. She challenged Ms. Pelosi that why U.S. companies can go telecommunication companies go into China and go anywhere, while Huawei is not allowed to go into the United States. But in fact, U.S. companies were restricted. That they were some companies as big as Boeing, right? As big as Google. They're not even allowed, like Facebook. They're not even, those high-tech companies are not even allowed to go into China. So that is how that their products are not allowed to, their search engine cannot be accessed in China. So this is not how Huawei is being treated unfairly. That is how Beijing has got used to how to take advantage of the weakness of Western countries, and it's pretty good at driving some wedge into the business community between business people and between public opinion. So it has been doing this all along, and it has been quite successful. And until now, I believe more and more people would start to see how badly we are being hurt with this outbreak of coronavirus.
Well, I think it's a real heads up when people discover that our antibiotics and lots of our medications, key components, come out of China. Oops.
Yeah.
Right. So that pretty much summarized for the past quarter century how, this, what I call a bribery partnership has beefed up the CCP. You know, the almost all visits by state heads from or to China have been accompanied by favorable trade terms or hefty purchases. And the Chinese media publicly, shamelessly declared this is a purchase order diplomacy. And the Chinese leaders have been gloating over this, calling it China's soft power. And this is soft power the China's, threat in turn validate the free world's China policy, further diminishing the free world's will to stand up to the CCP, to CCP's aggression. It was a vicious cycle. We wouldn't know when this vicious cycle will stop. If this coronavirus didn't happen, it could, you know, this vicious cycle could go longer. But almost at the same time, when I, you know, was pondering the CCP's generative Babism, as we have just discussed, I began to think about its ultimate goal, the CCP's ultimate end. And I realized not only are the expansion and aggression of the CCP a threat to humanity, but so is its death and decay. And this is what this coronavirus is now transitioning us into. In fact, the CCP's governance has long failed. Now, here we're talking about the concept of failed state. Now, according to Wikipedia, a failed state is when a government completely loses its function, the society is no longer working, and it's basically a fail. It's the worst situation of a country. But CCP's failed state is different than a failed state. Many other country or state have failed due to their incompetence. But the CCP failed by design, by its very purpose. Right? The CCP's governance has long failed. Even its, you know, perceived the second largest economy right now is a failure. For it is not a healthy and sustainable economy, but really a plundering system, which we also discussed before. But its failure is covered up by its deception, as we have discussed, to master this deception. Its failure only come to apparent in natural or man-made disasters, such as SARS. And the same year as the SARS, there's also a major flood, right? There's also a snow disaster, okay? So, and then in 2008, there's a Sichuan earthquake, and the melamine milk scandal also happened in 2008. And 2008 is the year that I began to talk about failed state. And then 2 years ago, there's a vaccine scandal.
Hold that thought, guys. We're going to get cut off by the news. So we're going to come back with our guests, Eureka Young and Dr. Shizong Chen. And you are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Welcome back to another episode of We the People Radio. Bill's over there having an episode.
Can have an episode.
He picked that song.
Yeah, I did. In 2009.
Yeah, Redneck Friend.
Yeah.
I don't know, for some reason it seemed like a good idea. You know, if you ever start a radio program, be really careful what you pick for your little intro song, because it can follow you for a while. You might accidentally like doing radio.
Yeah.
Actually, you would like doing radio, you know? There's a lot of local stations out there. I guess I should put in a plug for that. Lots of local stations in people's area. And I've got to tell you, if you want to learn some great stuff and get terrific information, start a talk show. Don't let everybody call in and just yammer about nothing. There's plenty of that.
And the good thing is most people have a face for radio.
Yeah. That's just because we were at the grocery store the other night and we were like, oh my God, are we the last people, normal people on the earth?
Oh yeah, that was a...
frightening.
That was a challenge.
It was very frightening. All right, so anyway, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and we do have a sponsor this hour, Pape Machinery.
You got the company right.
Yeah.
Good job.
Pape Machinery, John Deere... ag and turf dealer in Shasta Lake, California. They handle everything John Deere ag and everything John Deere turf, which is your lawnmowers, your push mowers.
What's the difference between a lawnmower and a push mower?
Well, like a riding lawnmower, I should say, yeah. And then have zero-turn mowers. They also handle Honda generators and mowing equipment, so you can go by and see them on that. And they recently acquired the franchise for Steel, so we're going to be a big Steel dealer here any day now.
We're in California, so everybody's a big Steel dealer. But that's the wrong kind. That's the S-T-E-A-L.
Yeah, no, this is S-T-I-H-L.
There you go. Just not to put too fine a point on it.
That's right. So if you need anything steel, from pressure washers to string trimmers, they're going to stock it up there. Go up and see them. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or get them online at papemachinery.com.
That's P-A-P-E.
P-A-P-E.
Ta-da.
Yeah.
Terrific. So today is still March 1st, second half of a program that we are doing. We just called it Beyond Coronavirus, just because, I mean, there's more to it than that. Yep, it's a virus and it's spreading all over the place, but there's more to it. Why it got started, how it got started, how it's allowed to spread. Is the information you're getting out of China accurate? No. Should you believe what they're telling us? No. You know. Just time for people to wake up.
Yep.
And
yeah, definitely now you really got to pay attention. You know, with this thing spreading as fast as it is, I don't know how many countries it's in now, but it is here in the U.S.
I know Dr. Chen can tell us.
Yeah. So be careful out there when you're doing air travel or any kind of mass transit travel. Wash your hands. Don't anybody breathe on you?
Yeah, tell us about that. Dr. Chen, you're the microbiologist. So what should people do? I keep hearing that the masks don't mean anything, but everyone, well, we're not, but people out there are wearing them.
It does mean, you know, there are different grades of mask.
Yeah.
You know, the N95 is more of a standard, or the more, not a standard one, but this is a better one, but any mask will help.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it does help.
It does.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I just use the ones I get down at the paint store. They seem to help a little bit.
And if you put a plastic bag over your head, it works pretty good too.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. I digress.
Not the lid.
So masks do help.
Mm-hmm. And wash your hand, and you know when you wash your hand. It's not just dip your, you know, hand in water or just run your hands in water and it's like dipping in the water. That's not good enough. You really have to use soap and wash it thoroughly. And, CDC will, the good thing about this country is the CDC, one, has the power to authority to issue safety data, unlike in China. And second, it will tell the public the truth. And so, we are, you know, there are more cases than before, and we'll probably cover that, why there are cases now. But that has something to do with the WHO's mistake.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll cover maybe next program. Follow the CDC's updated advice. Right now, they will let us know what community we have cases. And in other areas, people do not need to be as panic. So I think while this is, disease is certainly, this pandemic is certainly expanding, but I think United States are relatively low risk at this point. Some communities may be at high risk. Yes.
Yeah. What's your feel for this thing as it sits right now? Are we looking at a future dangerous situation where this could become a full-blown pandemic in the United States?
Or does it kind of turn out like SARS, where it looked like it was going to get everybody and then it didn't?
Well, my gut feeling is this depends entirely how we're going to handle this. And this is why I want to give this backdrop, how this happened, and what are the potential cure or measure the world and world, particular world governments can do. Maybe it's a little premature, but I want to disclose this data for now, because we'll re-mention it when we have proper setup for it. Okay. Preparation for people to understand this data, but I want to disclose this data now.
Okay.
That I got this from China, straight from China. They're authentic. So for the week between February 18th to 25th, for 7 days, 113 Falun Gong practitioners, maybe not all the people understand what Falun Gong is, but anyway, for this time, we just call them Falun Gong practitioners. 13 Falun Gong practitioners make call to their close family and distant family, the extended family members, and kind of do a census and to find how their family members are doing. Out of the 22,400 plus people they have, their family member they have called to, zero had infection. This is an amazing data.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because out of this 22,400 plus people, about 4,000 of them are in Wuhan, the epicenter, Huanggang, next to Wuhan, which the situation is worse, and in Chongqing, Beijing. Those four cities are heavily infected right now. And yet they have zero infection. And so now this is not most scientific way, because they don't have, what I say earlier, there's no PCR testing kits. There's no medical equipment to test whether they're infected, but at least they called out and asked them whether they have any symptom. And the sample size is so large, 22,000
people. That's pretty good. Well, and these are people who, this isn't the government. This isn't something that goes through, World Health. I mean, these are people who live in China, and the Falun Gong are traditionally, we've done many shows on that. So if that's a new idea for you, please go to We the People Radio. .us, click on the China tab, and we have a lot of information on there for you. But these folks are the ones who typically get snatched off the street, and they become their organs become forcefully harvested, and they get either sent back with missing heart, missing lungs, missing stuff, or they wind up in a crematorium never to be seen again.
Nothing good
happens there. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Yeah, when we come back, I'd like to know what you attribute that zero infection rate
to. Yeah, I know.
That's,
so many questions, so little time.
Yeah, we'll be back.
We are going to hear the rest of it.
Thank you.
If you could only see, you could only see what goes on in here. Oh, now they can. I forgot to say that we're now on the AUN TV network. Frightening. So we're really hoping that in the future we can get our guests on Skype so you'll be able to see them. Kind of exciting. Yeah. We're going to put Robert through his paces. He's doing all the video for us. Kind of awesome. So we'll post those videos online. You can go watch. But, you know, it's always just better to listen because really we're all about the sound.
Yeah. So we were talking about the Falun Gong and their infection rate of zero.
Well, their family.
Yeah. How do you, what do you attribute that to?
Yeah. I attribute it to the practice, the benefit of
clean
that.
Living, huh?
And also the power of this practice. Now, I know that there will be CCP followers immediately once they hear this, are going to jump out immediately and say, "This is non-scientific. This is you know, Falun Gong make it up." And all kinds of things, you know, but facts are fact. In fact, the benefit of Falun Gong practice to people's health is, hold on, let me turn up the phone, sorry.
Somebody's already challenging those numbers. Getting him on the phone.
They're calling in to give him an update.
That out.
Yeah, the numbers was 113, if I heard correctly, 113 Falun Gong practitioners reached out to their distant family members, distant relatives. The total sample was 22,400 plus. So each person on average reached out 200 people, right?
Wow. Yeah. And none of them were infected.
None of them are infected, and some of them, the 4,000 or so of them, are in fact in areas that's heavily infected. Mm-hmm. And now I double-checked, the exact number is 22,474.
Wow.
And these are backed up by their real name, and, you know, there's, you know, Falun Gong, is still severely persecuted in China. So they do this out of their benevolence, out of their, you know, care for the people. And so this is done under great risk. But similar survey took place before 1999. The persecution was launched by the CCP in 1999. That before then, in 1997, there are three census or investigation. Those are done by professionals, and they, in those studies, they covered 40,000 over 40,000 practitioners, and that report also showed the healing rate of the practice is over 97%. So it's a powerful, beneficial practice. In fact, over 10 years ago, I remember it's around 2008, I went to WHO headquarters in Geneva and contacted them and suggesting them to do a you know, health benefit study on Falun Gong. And they say they're going to have someone in the United States contact me, but, you know, nobody contact me. Probably, you know, they look into it, and then the CCP say, no.
Yeah, they got a hold of China, and China said, no, thank you.
Yeah. So, now, Falun Gong is known for the benefit. In fact, it is because this benefit that over 100 million people came to practice Falun Gong by 1999. The practice was brought to the public, introduced to the public in 1992. In 7 years, it grew to, 100 million people. And it is this large following that caused some within the TCP to be jealous and launched persecution. Yet, this persecution has gone on for 20 years. And Falun Gong as a group withstood that persecution.
And got bigger.
Yeah. And so at the higher level, I would say, since that group can stand up, can withstand the persecution from the CCP, it would be quite fitting that this group of people and their family, because their family member also suffer through the persecution. So they, you know, it's only fitting that they and their family are free or protected from this terrible virus that, you know, has a lot to do, caused by the CCP virus itself. So I think, you know, this is, they're, you know, I'm just giving people this data.
Yeah, this is your, this is the karma update.
Yeah. And so there, you know, there is hope out there. You know, I understand people are waiting for vaccine and other medicine. I'm all for that, but the vaccine
maybe
more than half year away, and some of the medicine are still in clinical trial. And you know, I hope that this would come quickly to stop this terrible disease. But meanwhile, just I want our audience to know that there is this practice that has so far done great benefit to its practitioner and their family. And then also, there is now it's touring season of a show called Shen Yun. We also talk about that in this program. And it's in different city. Those audience who find, if you find the show in your city, go watch that show. It also has benefit. And so, you know, I'm just giving out this data.
Yeah, you know, we'll add that to this page. That's on our China tab. And I know that the tickets for the 2020 season of Shen Yun are out now. And I know on the West Coast, San Francisco, Berkeley, Sacramento, those are just the places that were, you know, kind of near us, but it's all over.
Yeah, and, you know, if the show is in your city, go see it, you're in luck. If not, maybe you can request Shen Yun to come to your city to request Shen Yun showing. And now the reason I bring this up is right now there are disinformation being spread in the United States, also in the world, by CCP followers. They text other people to say, Shen Yun has the Shen Yun tour group. There are 7 touring group of Shen Yun. One group is in South Korea now, and they spread this information and said, you know, it has. This tour group is in Korea, and they carry this virus, and it will, get you infected.
Uh-huh.
No, the opposite, right? Shen Yun is performed by Falun Gong practitioners, and they are healthy.
And it's promoting the real history of China, the great history of China prior to the takeover of the CCP and the shutting down of basically all sorts of wonderful culture.
Right. And just about a month ago, when San Francisco has staged Shen Yun show, there's an article in San Francisco Chronicle questioning why Shen Yun spent so much money on its advertisement. I read that report. Maybe somebody has read that as well. And it I was reading the article and wondering, what does the reporter want to do? I mean, is he out of his concern for Sheng Yun's budget?
Yeah, it's not like they're an NGO or a non-profit. I mean, they can advertise as much as they want.
Why
aren't
they focusing on Bloomberg?
Yeah, what's going on with
that? Heck, look at Steyer. He spent gazillions of dollars and now he dropped out.
Yeah.
These guys are actually doing a performance that's amazing. That people, I mean, they love it. We keep missing it. This is the year, though. This is the year we're going to get to go. June first told us about this, and my mom went and my sister went this year, and they said it was amazing. Let's see. At this point, let's take a really quick break, and then we're going to come back. I wanted you guys to also speak a little bit about the virus and whether or not you think it came out of a lab, or, you know, because there's all this discussion about that, and that hasn't actually been definitively dealt with, and they're making it sound like if you're saying that it came from a lab and was an engineered type of a virus that you're a crackpot. So
you
can let us know if we're crackpots or not when we come back. Stay tuned. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Yeah, that doesn't have anything to do with you being a crackpot.
No, I'm going to be a crackpot anyway.
Yeah, you are a crackpot.
So now let us know if we're crackpots. Did it come from a lab, or did it just magically spring up in a market?
Flew in on a duck's back.
Yeah, so to properly understand this question, again, we need to know the backdrop, the background of this. Virus and terrible diseases do pop up here and there throughout the history. But this particular one has many unusual features with it. And that's what people suspect, that it's man-made. Then there are many American scientists who disagree. Dr. Chen talked about it last week, right? Well, those scientists, so-called scientists, first of all, they reject this idea out of their self-interest. They think an attack or a criticism of this coronavirus being man-made would give a bad impression or bad feeling of the public towards biologists. Well, you have to think about your social responsibility, your accountability first, right? And also, the biologist, the so-called biologist in China, is not the same as the biologists in the United States.
Huh.
Right? So, and this is, again, let me just talk about this failing first, because the CCP's failing is a big topic, but let me just talk about this particular failing, that is, I think, the most complete and worst failing of a state is the failing of people, the moral destruction, that people have no moral fear, they'll do anything. So, do you recall, or do you know that a few months ago, less than a year ago, There's a Chinese scientist published an article inserting a piece of human gene into a monkey. Did you know that news?
No.
No, and just looking at the people in the studio whose eyes all just got really big, I guess none of us knew that.
Right. So that caused an outrage in the world. I mean, you're playing with human gene and inserting into a monkey, right? But he did it in China, right? And later, he with a world outrage, he now is sentenced to 3 years. Now, that is one known example.
Yeah, who knows what he didn't announce?
Right, and who knows who else have done it?
That too.
Right? So, with a system like that, with no account, I'll get back to later, but when I say the CCP failed by design, by its very purpose, it's because the CCP is a zero accountability system. And when it comes to scientists, they also have zero accountability. Now, we'll talk more about this. This coronavirus outbreak has a lot to do with zero accountability symptom also. You know, as early as December 27, scientists and clinicians in China knew this is a SARS. They're sequencing data, okay? Yet, knowing this data didn't have an effect. So, the data, this is very threatening data, meaning that SARS is infecting patients, right? Didn't cause them or didn't enable the society to have any provision against it. So, the society do not have any provision against terrible things in China. I'm trying to say that the Chinese biologists, they can play with any dangerous material as they want. Right? So that's the backdrop. Now, in terms of this particular virus, I have a group of biologists, virologists, and clinician got together. We have looked into this also. Now I can say responsibly here, we found that this virus has an unusual genetic background. That is, it's a result of two recombination events. This doesn't happen naturally. So therefore, in its genetic information, we find unexplainable data. Now, normally, as a scientist, when you want to prove something, the burden of proof is upon you, right? If I want to prove that this virus is man-made, then I have to prove further why this two recombination event is unlikely. But the burden of proof at this point, I argue, changes. Because with this virus causing such great damage, the greater the damage, the more burden of proof is on the ones that caused the damage. Now, there are enough evidence, there are enough questions to say the point that this virus is man-made, even though we do not yet, we do not yet have the bulletproof proof that it is man-made. It is up to the CCP, it's up to its scientists to explain why there are so many abnormal, behavior or features or anomaly associated with this virus. So consider all the balance of the data. It certainly points to that this virus is man-made. And unfortunately, many of the top scientists are in the world are not helping this cause. When they say there's no clear evidence, they are on the side of irresponsible scientists
right.
in China. They are really on their side because there's damage. It's not like this is not a pure scientific debate. This is a discussion, this is an issue with severe cost, severe danger to the world. And they should consider this.
Well, and it begs the question, for what purpose would they develop a virus like this other than germ warfare, I guess? I mean, why else would something like this be developed?
Yes, and there are various sources due to CCP's infighting within the entire party hierarchy. Some of the generic sequencing that Chinese scientists were able to accomplish by end of last year, by around December 27th, the labs, it was a P3, which is a level 3, one level below, one notch below the P4 lab in Wuhan. That lab successfully did the genetic sequencing. But then by January, it was trying to publish that. It reported to the highest leadership in China. But that lab was shut down on January the 13th. So it was between December 27th and January the 11th, they got the sequencing. And the sequencing that China eventually submitted to WHO was not the sequencing from this P3 lab in China. It was from maybe Science Academy or from a different organization. And this sequence was probably, it was like everybody was silenced, right? The lab was dissolved. And Chinese media revealed this. The dates that Dr. Chen cited was from these Chinese media. They would not like leak out such damaging information. But since the humanitarian cost, as Dr. Chen just mentioned a minute ago, was so huge, those within China, some of them are afraid of being held responsible. Although the party overall has no accountability, but every now and then they would punish a few scapegoats, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like those who are corrupt and who's basically they weren't not basically everybody was corrupt, and they were like punished because they were not aligned very well with the current leadership, whoever the leader is in charge. So some of these people, they're leaking this information out. Then there are also who were on exile overseas. One particular was the owner of a Hong Kong newspaper, Sin Pao. Pao meaning newspaper in Hong Kong language, in dialect. And he served in a biowarfare troop in Shenzhen. Shenzhen has this troop because it has a nuclear power plant called Daya Bay Nuclear Plant. It was built around the time of after Tiananmen Square. So it was built with certain, probably with help from the West. And several, according to this newspaper owner, who is now in exile in the United States, his colleagues and his subordinates and superiors, officers and soldiers in Shenzhen Biowarfare Unit were called into Wuhan in early February. That is a female general, Miss Chen Wei, the general Chen Wei, was put in charge to seal off the P4 lab in Wuhan. And those who went to Wuhan from Shenzhen, whose jobs are to protect this nuclear plant, they got moved to Wuhan, and several of them already died in Wuhan. So these information, this kind of sources, they're trying to leak out and either to protect themselves or trying to pin the blame on their opponents within the party hierarchy. So I believe in addition to the scientific research that Dr. Chen said, now the burden lays on Chinese government, we are also seeing from other sources, there are some circumstantial, although these are not scientific, circumstantial evidence, pieces of evidence that it is highly suspicious.
Sure.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, hold that thought.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break.
Are you reading my mind?
Yeah.
You give me the high sign.
And okay. With that.
Really quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Yeah, just reading in France, they have 130 cases, 73 of which are brand new, marking a 125% one-day increase. So it's far from contained, and I think that's something we better keep an eye out for. So with China being unable to contain it, what are they doing now? I mean, they send their crack team over there to try to seal off the area, and some of them die. I think that kind of shows you how big of a problem it was from the very get-go, doesn't it?
Yeah. So what we're doing here is to give information out, but what people do with this information still matters. Right? As you said, this virus is far from being contained. It's going up in the world, but China, or the CCP claim, is going down. And that in itself should alarm the world. The root of this pandemic is in China. And if we do not get that contained, it's not going to end. Yet, what the CCP is doing now is force people to go back to work.
Oh, that'll help.
Yeah, that'll slow it down.
They can all reinfect each other.
That's actually against the current laws in China. In China, there is a law, called Laws on Contagious Diseases. And it specifies that while the outbreak is going on, it must, stop the school, must stop, the work. Yet the CCP leaders, they care more about economy, about their legitimacy of governing.
Well, any country with a forced organ harvesting program doesn't care a whole lot about the health and welfare of its citizens. I mean, that's sort of a giveaway.
So now the world has to decide, what are we going to do? If we don't decide, I can see very easily and very quickly that the world will be forced to see, to watch the CCP kill off one city after another, because it's going to force people to go back to work. And it already did, and there are some places, there are already cases when a whole factory are infected, they have to close down again, and yet they're going to continue to force people to go back to work and make this case the disease get worse and worse. And if when the area is has a lot of people infected, they're going to lock down either the area, the city, or that district, or that building, or the factory. And they'll let those people die by themselves. And worse yet, with a long-term lockdown of cities like Wuhan, this could easily turn into humanitarian. Well, it's not easily. It's already turned.
Yeah, I was going to say, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's well on its way to becoming.
What else happens in Wuhan? Like, what do they do there? Because there are a lot of people who live there. I forget now what the population is, but I remember the number was large.
It was 11 million.
Yeah.
With some already left, but there's still 9 million, estimate 9 million there. So now, when we're talking about failed state, that's an example. When they lock down the city, and you can cut off the transportation beyond the city, but they also prohibit any transportation within the city. Think about that.
Oh yeah, that creates all kinds of problems. I mean, how do you get supplies and food and all that into the city if they got everything locked down?
Right.
You've got to feed 9 million people. I mean, you better have a steady flow.
Yeah.
Right. So this is the humanitarian crisis is already in the making. You know, Eureka has some data about, you know, other patients. Eureka, want to talk about that?
Some leading Chinese intellectuals, they are calling for attention to long-term patients with chronic diseases. They're going untreated because the hospitals had been converted to treat coronavirus patients, and also to avoid infection, they have closed off other sections in the hospital. This happened not just to Wuhan. I don't have the exact number of patients, but the numbers tend to be huge. Those hospitals, their beds were all booked. It was very hard to get admitted into a hospital in Wuhan and in other cities. Now, back like 2 months ago, there was not a single coronavirus patient. So the beds were all occupied by these other cancer patients who are going through chemotherapy.
Right.
But now these patients were all sent home. And there was specific outcries from HIV patients. Someone who was living on this medical treatment, and he was not allowed, even with private vehicle. Dr. Chen said you could shut down transportation out of the city. And I would even argue you may even shut down public transportation, then the community could still help each other, right?
Sure, they can still drive their cars.
Right, they banned private vehicles on the road entirely.
Oh.
So this HIV
they prohibit the gas station. They prohibit gas stations selling gas to private vehicles.
Oh, well, that would keep the cars off the road.
And you, like you say, you think about the scale of that with 9 million people, and you're not going to sell gasoline, you can't drive your own vehicle, public transportation's down. You have a crisis within days. You have a crisis that is going to take quite a long time to get back on the rails.
Yes, and these patients, if his like in fact his lack of immune system would kick would escalate, then his income wouldn't afford his treatment because he had to live on imported drugs instead of now like lower cost drugs. So this is getting out of control. And a leading novelist who was chairwoman of Wuhan's Literature Association, she was saying that the government, someone need to be held responsible. In given the dire situation of 9 million people left in Wuhan and 5 million more who left before the lockdown, they were like treated like virus themselves, and no community would admit him in China. So this is happening not just to Uyghurs. It is happening to Han, the main nationality of people in China, as long as you're from Wuhan or Hubei province. And also, it is happening again, secretly though, to Hong Kong people, the three leaders, one newspaper owner of Apple Daily, Dr. Jimmy Lai, Mr. Jimmy Lai Chi-in, together with two other pro-democracy activists, were arrested, and they were facing charges. I believe a trial would be scheduled sometime in May. And so this, while the country fails and the crackdown continues against the Uyghurs, against the Chinese people, against people in Hong Kong, and now with warplanes circling Taiwan, so this is really dangerous. The international community need to respond resolutely and promptly. Otherwise, Chinese people will be first bear the brunt brutality, and then the rest of the world will face the same.
Oh, sure. And that's not mentioning the neighboring countries that have a border with China, like South Korea. I think they just reported nearly 4,000 cases in South Korea. So, I mean, it's not contained by a long shot, regardless of what they say. So, it's definitely spreading, and the humanitarian side of this,
I don't think
we've even started to address.
I don't think so either. And we are out of time for today, which I knew would happen. And Ashley, if you could turn my sound on, that'd be sweet. thank you. We're trying to read each other's minds here through the double pane glass. You know, sometimes we do it, sometimes we don't.
We got her in quarantine.
I know. Yeah, we do. We got her in her own isolation booth. We'll be back next week. We're going to continue on with this topic with our two guests, Dr. Shizong Chen and Eureka Chen. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.